Good morning. It's Wednesday, August 13th. I'm Shamita Basu. This is Apple News Today. On today's show, with Israel's targeted killing of journalists, our lens into Gaza is shrinking. Trump's unprecedented deal with the world's most valuable company, and there's no escaping ads at the movies. But first, members of the D.C. National Guard started to deploy last night after President Trump's decision to seize control of D.C.'s police and mobilize the military to address crime in a city where violent crime is at a 30-year low. They've been told they'll be stationed in the Capitol until September 25th. But what role the Guard will actually play remains unclear. D.C.'s Mayor Muriel Bowser says her expectation is that they will patrol federal properties, including parks, monuments, and federal buildings. Pentagon officials say the Guard will not participate in law enforcement. They'll only support other federal agents. But officials did leave open the possibility that these armed troops would be allowed to temporarily detain people. Throughout his second term, the president has pushed the boundaries of how the American military can be deployed on U.S. soil.
This has been an ongoing pattern for President Trump, even from his first administration.
Vera Bergengruen is a national security reporter at The Wall Street Journal.
He often sees the military as something he wants to call in or to show that he's serious about something, especially when it comes to law and order or fighting crime.
Very few presidents have been so willing to deploy the military for domestic purposes.
It's a step that most presidents are really hesitant to take unless there's a major crisis or disruption somewhere. And this has happened, you know, in the past couple of decades. But Trump has done this at least three or four times only in the last 6 months.
He sent the National Guard to the U.S.-Mexico border, where they've been involved in detaining migrants. And he sent the Guard and hundreds of Marines to Los Angeles earlier this summer in response to demonstrations over ICE immigration raids and arrests. Hundreds of troops are still in the city today. And this week, a federal judge is hearing arguments about whether the administration violated federal law by mobilizing them to L.A. California's Democratic Governor Gavin Newsom is challenging Trump's order and asking the judge to return control of California's Guard to him. The administration is also planning to expand the military's role in immigration enforcement by using more military bases to house people the administration suspects of being in the country illegally. It's already used a number of bases for this, including Guantanamo Bay in Cuba, which was challenged in the courts. Bergengruen says one reason Trump has been using the military more to support his political agenda in this term is because he has fewer people in his inner circle telling him not to.
In his first administration, his then chief of staff, John Kelly, he later told others that one of his biggest challenges was trying to persuade Trump not to use the military, and that Trump didn't seem to understand that it really was a last resort and he couldn't just rely on the military to back him up when he wanted to show that he was serious about something. And in this case, you know, there are fewer John Kellys around.
But former and current members of the military told her the presence of U.S. troops deployed onto American streets more often sets a concerning precedent.
The fact that they would be desensitized to seeing them on their streets or start kind of considering law enforcement in a way that isn't a part of the U.S. Constitution or the way that the United States runs is something that doesn't sit well with a lot of current and former military.
D.C. is unique in that Trump has direct control of its National Guard in a way that he doesn't have with others around the country. A former professor at the U.S. Army War College told Bergengruen, at best, his decision to deploy the Guard to D.C. will give him a way to take credit for the already historically low crime rates in the city. But at worst, she says, this could be a test run for more legally dubious use of military force around the country. Now to an unusual deal between the Trump administration and the world's most valuable company, NVIDIA, which is raising questions over its legality and the repercussions for national security. NVIDIA produces chips that power many of technology's fastest-growing products, especially in the realm of AI. But the company had been facing challenges because of restrictions put in place by the Biden administration on selling its chips to China, which the government had defended on national security grounds. In April, Trump added certain NVIDIA chips to those restrictions, but now he's reversed course and told reporters that NVIDIA's CEO, Jensen Huang, was free to sell into the Chinese market, but for a price.
So I said, listen, I want 20%. So I just wanted. So when I say I want 20, I want for the country. I only care about the country. I don't care about myself. And he said, would you make it 15? So we negotiate a little deal.
It means that the government will get a cut for their sales. Now, that sounds like an export tax, which is banned by the Constitution, but this deal is being described as voluntary, which would be a way around the ban. White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt told reporters on Tuesday the legality of it is still being ironed out. Lisa Etichico, tech editor at CNN Business, told us about the deal.
There really aren't many, or if any at all, examples of the government kind of taking a cut of exports in this way. An arrangement like this is definitely unusual, but it could also be perhaps an acknowledgement that, you know, China is going to move forward in AI. So this is a way for the U.S. to actually kind of benefit from China's AI expansion and maybe have them kind of rely on our technology for part of that.
But Etichico said that for some government officials, national security concerns around selling chips to China haven't gone away, even if the government has secured additional revenue. Republican Congressman John Molinar, who chairs the House Select Committee for China, warned against setting a precedent that incentivizes the government to grant licenses to sell China technology that will enhance its AI capabilities. The chip in question is called the H20, thought to have helped in the development of the popular Chinese AI system DeepSeek. Etichico told us it's not one of NVIDIA's most powerful chips, but it could be a key source of revenue for the company going forward. And she said this deal could become important to the wider trade talk discussions between China and the U.S.
It certainly gives the Trump administration a card to play. It kind of opens up the flow of these mid-tier chips, again, not the highest-end chips, to China, while giving the Trump administration, a bargaining chip in its ongoing trade talks.
Chips have become an increasingly important part of Trump's engagement strategy with tech companies. He has threatened 100% levies on semiconductor chips, but carved out exemptions for companies like Apple, among others, who committed to domestic investment. Trump has also left the door open to further deals for even more powerful technology. He said he was in talks with NVIDIA's CEO over their most advanced chip, the Blackwell, and that he was open to a deal there too for, quote, 30 to 50%. Funeral processions for the six journalists killed in Gaza by a targeted Israeli airstrike were held this week. The killings drew swift condemnation from the UN, the EU, and several press freedom groups. Intentionally targeting and killing a journalist or any civilian is considered a war crime under international humanitarian law. The most well-known of those killed, and the person Israel said they were targeting, was Anas al-Sharif, a correspondent for Al Jazeera, who CNN reports had become a household name and vital news source for those in the Arabic-speaking world, with millions of social media followers. He could often be seen reporting among rubble or speaking to Palestinians on the ground in Gaza. His final broadcast from a hospital in Gaza focused on the worsening hunger crisis, showing how starving children are suffering from Israeli restrictions on aid. Israeli forces had been targeting al-Sharif for months and accused him of working with Hamas. The IDF, however, has not shared substantial evidence to support their accusation that he was involved in military activities. And both Al Jazeera and the Committee to Protect Journalists have strongly refuted the allegations. Here's what the chief executive of CPJ told NPR after Israel first made these accusations.
This is part of a pattern that we've seen from Israel, in which Israel alleges that journalists are terrorists and then fails to produce any real credible evidence that they are such.
Israel has not provided any explanation for why it targeted the other journalists in the strike, Mohammad Kreika, Ibrahim Zahir, and Mohammad Nufal. All worked for Al Jazeera, plus two freelance reporters named Mo'amman Aliwa and Mohammad Al-Khaldi. Throughout this war, the world has relied on Palestinian journalists like Al-Sharif to provide a direct lens into what's happening in Gaza. Israel has not allowed international journalists to enter and work freely from Gaza, only offering supervised tours in rare cases. And the number of working journalists left has rapidly shrunk. According to Reporters Without Borders, Israel has killed almost 200 journalists in Gaza since October of 2023. Roughly a quarter of them were directly targeted while working. And Gaza is considered the deadliest place in the world for journalists today. Irene Khan, the UN Special Rapporteur on Freedom of Opinion and Expression, told Democracy Now! How this threatens how the world understands the war.
It is not killing in the context of war. It is a deliberate strategy to stop independent voices reporting. So it's as much a threat to independent journalism as it is to the journalists themselves, as well as a blatant attempt by the Israelis to stop the world witnessing what they are doing.
Before he was killed, Al-Sharif wrote a social media post for Al Jazeera to share in the event of his death. In it, he says despite the pain and suffering he and other Palestinians have experienced, he, quote, never hesitated for a single day to do his work. Before we let you go, a few other stories we're following. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has ruled out giving up the eastern part of his country, set to be the key discussion point of upcoming talks between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin. Trump had already said some swapping of territories would be needed for any deal and that the meeting would be a chance to, quote, feel out his Russian counterpart. Meanwhile, Reuters reports that in advance of the meeting, Russia has carried out its most extensive incursion so far this year, as it looks to increase pressure on Ukraine to give up land. There were some big changes in the State Department's long-awaited report on international human rights. Detailed criticisms against some of Trump's allies, like Israel and El Salvador, have been removed, while countries at odds with the president, like Brazil and South Africa, have come under attack. Sections on gender-based and LGBTQ+ violence have been limited or removed completely, and there were new criticisms for traditional allies like the UK and France over what it described as curbing freedom of expression. The report was quietly delivered to Congress almost a half year late while lawmakers are on recess. And finally, you thought you were safe from commercials at the movies, but the Washington Post reports that AMC Theaters has bowed to financial pressure. In July, the theater introduced commercials before the movie, not during, for the very first time, and it appears to be a bet that is paying off. Moviegoers are now being told in the app that they should expect the movie to begin 25 to 30 minutes after the listed start time. So now you know exactly how late you can plan to show up. You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening in the News app right now, we've got a narrated article coming up next. Bloomberg Businessweek goes inside a crime ring that's targeting star athletes. If you're listening in the podcast app, follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story. And I'll be back with the news tomorrow.